Same seats. Same seats. No, Jonathan, that's your seat right there. That one. Same seats. Description of what the etrog should look like. There is an issue of grafted etrogim or etrog hamurkav, where they graft the scion of an etrog onto the stock of a lemon tree, and it changes the appearance of the fruit. Even though botanically, genetically, it's really the same thing, but the appearance is different. And one of the things I pointed out was, if you remember, the cross section. Right, of the fruit looks different inside. Now we get to the size of the etrog. The size of the etrog is the size of a betza. How big is a betza, you might ask? About 2 eggs, right? No? As you might or might not know, there's a machloket poskim as to the proper shiur of a beitza. According to the Chazon Ish, it's 100 cc's. According to Rav Chaim Noah, it's 58 cc's. This machloket is based on a machloket we've shown him, early Achronim, where Rivash raises a stira between two different sugyot and how to calculate a volume measure of a ravid. Anything?
No, just that that's
the
minimum size.
What?
That's minimum size?
Minimum, yes, we're talking minimum. You've heard of the what's a cc? Cubic centimeter or milliliter.
10 milliliters is
1 cc. Huh? No. 1 milliliter is 1 cc. And 1 cc, therefore, is 1 milliliter. And there are 1,000 of those in a liter. Okay? Has anybody ever heard the term Shir Chazon Ish?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Chazon Ish was a god that lived two generations ago in Israel, and he was really following a question that Rivash raised, that they know the Yehuda Paskin. Based, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of the sugyot, but there's one sugya where the Gemara makes a calculation based on eggs, and another sugya, the Gemara makes a calculation based on etzbaot meaning fingers. Specifically the width of thumbs. Okay? Anyway, one sugya, it's like a ravias is 2.7 times 2.7 times 2.7 etzbaot, coming to a liter, and they don't jive. The two sugyas don't jive. And because they don't jive, the Chazon Ish came to a conclusion that perhaps eggs nowadays have shrunk. Okay? And therefore, he holds that to be machmir, not so much of the ikar din, but to be machmir, he basically doubles the shiurim. And that's how the term, the shiur Chazon Ish, came about. It's not only a question of volume, it's also a question in length, as we will soon find out. The shiur Chazon Ish. It has to do with the revias, how big of a kos you need for Shabbos and for Pesach and things like that. That's why you talk about Shir Chazon Ish. Reminds me of a story. There was once this American tourist that was in Meir Sharim, and he was looking for an incredible gift for his friend. So he went into... What are you laughing at? I didn't even tell the story. But he went into a shop. He went into a shop and he said, "Listen, I need something different for my friends. I have like 8 friends. I need something different." Okay, say no more. Okay, he goes into the back, comes back two minutes later, handful of rocks, puts them on the table, and says, "Here you go, that'll be 80 shekel." The guy says, "80 shekel for 8 rocks? Why would I want to pay 10 shekel a rock?" He says, "These are no ordinary rocks. These rocks are special Shabbos rocks that were prepared for Shabbos for demonstrations to throw at cars." The guy loves it, he laughs, he says, "This is great, my gift wrapped them all up," and he takes them. And he's the happiest guy, thinking the reaction of each one of his friends when he gives him this gift from Israel. And he's in the taxi to the airport when he remembers that he forgot his another friend. He has a 9th friend that would love this thing, and he says to the taxi driver, "Is there a Tashmishei Kedusha store anywhere in the area?" So he said, "Well, we're going to the airport right near Bnei Brak, there are plenty of them." Goes to Bnei Brak, stops by the first Tashmishei Kedusha store, and he goes in and he says, "Do you have any Shabbos rocks? I need one Shabbos rock." He says, "No problem." And he goes in the back, 2 minutes go by, 5 minutes go by, 10 minutes go by. After 20 minutes, the guy comes in, sweating, heaving this huge boulder, puts it on the table, he says, "That's 100 shekel." The guy says, "100 shekel? Look at the size of that thing. I was just in Meir Sharim, and they gave me something this big, cost me 10 shekel each." He says, "Meir Sharim, what do they know about Shirim? This is Shir Chazon Ish." Anyways, now back to our show. Okay, the minimal size of an esrog should be of a kebetza. Since it's a mitzvah d'oraisa the first day, so people are knowing to be makbid on the Chazon Ish, which is 100 cc's. Which means that your esrog has to be 100 cc's, 100 milliliters. That's basically be the volume of 100 cc's. Now, you're asking yourself, how in the world am I going to measure that? You're definitely asking yourself that question, right?
Displacement.
Displacement, exactly. You take yourself a cup of water, okay, in your pocket, and a pot in your other pocket, and you fill the cup of water up to the top, and you just push the estrog in to the cup, and the water that it displaces, you then measure that water, and that tells you the volume of the estrog. Right? Not very practical, right? So I have a rule of thumb. If you pick up the estrog, let's assume for a moment this is an estrog. You pick up estrog and you hold it like this around the widest point. If your middle finger touches your thumb, then it might be a question. And then you have to either do displacement or look for a different estrog. If they don't touch, yes. If they don't touch, so then you don't have to worry about it. It's more than 100 cc's. Okay, you will find a estrogim on sale that are quite small. You'll find a estrogim on sale of the likes that you wouldn't normally find in Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, most estrogim are what color?
Yellow.
In Israel, most of them are green. In Chutz La'aretz, most estrogim have pitums, right? No? Not really?
Yes.
Depends what community you're from. But in Israel, you will find that the vast majority, usually over 90%, don't have a pitum. Okay? What happens in Israel? In other words, why is it that the estrogim are not yellow and don't have pitums? Does everybody know?
They buy them from a different country?
Huh?
They get them from a different place?
In Israel, they get them from a different place? All the estrogim are based grown in Israel.
Not really.
Huh? Yeah, a little bit in Italy. Huh? No. The answer is that the Jews in Chutz La'aretz pay 5 to 10 times the price per esrog, so that the Jews in Israel export all the pitum esrogs and the yellow esrogs because they're getting 5 to 10 times more per esrog, right? Did we discuss esrog and prices and where to buy last week?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why you don't find it as much. But in any case, you have to make sure that it's a proper size. The third area of halacha. Yes? Yes. Not a lot more. No, not a lot more. 10, 20 shekel more. Is that a lot? By the way, I mentioned the price. The average price last year was like 70 shekel for a set, for an entire set. This year, there might be a shortage of lulavim because Egypt has completely boycotted El Arish, exporting lulavim to Israel. They just don't want to have anything to do with Israel, and they're not exporting lulavim. That was on the news. What?
What do you think about that chart near the Putnam Court?
I didn't see any chart.
There's a silent chart near the Putnam Court.
Oh, so I told you last week. I said you have to find the guy and tell him I'm willing to sign my name. I'm not going to promise to buy from you.
Why?
Because let's say he has junky schora. You sign and you meet Mitchaye for junkie schora? Huh? You're the man?
I am the middleman.
You're the middleman?
I am the Kisayan.
Fuck it up.
Wow.
They bring Mehudar set.
Okay. Let's say it's called Mehudar. In other words, what they do is they classify regular and kosher and like Mehudar, and then sometimes they say Mahadran, Mina Mahadran. Those are just names, they don't mean anything. He has no idea. Hill has no idea whether he's going to get nice stuff or deformed stuff. He has no idea. How many years are you working in this area? What are your connections? Do you know to trust your supplier?
I've known him for a while.
Okay.
Let's bring them Airbnb before you give it up. People can buy before, and now if they don't like them, they can buy them somewhere else before. Like
so in other words, anybody who signs up doesn't have to go with you. They could just sign their name and not go to you. I'm not saying so. I'm just telling you, my opinion. You should not. I mentioned it last week, didn't I? You didn't. You shouldn't be mitchayev to buy. You shouldn't buy closed boxes, okay? And you shouldn't be mitchayev to buy. It's even worse than a closed box because now you don't even see the box. You're just signing your name on a piece of paper that you're going to buy from that guy. 90 shekel might be a fair price this year. It might not be. We don't know. The market didn't start. It might be 70, but you know. So not a nafkamin of maybe 20 shekel. I would not commit to anybody. I would say, if it's nice, I'll buy it. If not, not. Yeah. Next. There's a halacha of lakicha tam. It says in Torah, lakach tem biyom arishon. Lakach tem literally means you should take, but the drasha is lakicha tama. Tama means complete. There's a special halacha that that the arba minim have to be complete. There's tamimut. Okay? And that, according to most Rishonim and most poskim, applies only to the first day. In Chutz La'aretz, the first 2 days. Afterwards, it doesn't apply. What halachos fall under the category of lakicha tama? Number one, nakuv, if it has a hole. Number two, chaser, if it's missing something. Number three, if it's soft and mushy. And number four, nitala pitom, if the pitom is gone. Those four halachot have to do with lakicha tama, and they only apply to the first day or the first 2 days. Let's go through them one by one. Okay? Nakuv. Nakuv means that there's a hole in it, but there's nothing specifically missing. Now, how do you achieve that, nakuv? How do you get a hole if there's nothing missing? Let's say your little sister decides to play, I don't know, voodoo doll on your esrog. And she takes out like a long pin and jabs your esrog through. So here there's a machloket rishonim and machloket b'halacha. What does it mean to go through or to be mefulash? According to the Rif, it's not possible unless the... Let me draw a picture.
Unless the pin actually exits the other side of the etrog. Pin comes out the other side, that's mefulash and that's possible. However, according to the Rush, if the pin enters the pulp, the second center section of the etrog, that's considered mefulash, and that's puzzle.
That's how the Ramah paskins that even if it just it reaches the inside pulp, then it would be puzzle. Huh? The rush. How do you know if it reaches the pulp? You have two options. One is to slice it open. The other one is to do an MRI on your esrog. That's it. How else do you know? How else would you know? You can only find out after the fact, slice it open. All right. No, if you see a little thing that might or might not be a hole, you don't have to be choshes that it's a hole. We're talking about when you know that something penetrated the esrog. Okay, Ellie, you had your hand up? No, wasn't you? All right. The next halacha, lakicha tama, is the din of choser. If the esrog is missing something, did you ever look at an esrog while you're buying, let's say, and you see this black spot on it, and you're not sure if it's part of the esrog or not, so you start like scraping it away? No, you ever people look at, like, see people scraping away, and the esrog seller like dives across the table to save his esrog from your scraping? So sometimes people try to scrape it away, and all of a sudden a chunk comes out from the, what's it called, the zest. Does anybody know what zest is? It's an outermost skin where the color is, the zest of the etrog, a chunk comes out. That's a din of chaser. If a chunk comes out so that you see the white underside, the rind of the etrog, that's chaser, and that's possible on the first day. Even a mashu, okay, even the smallest amount. And it only applies to the first day. How do we know? The Gemara in Sukkah Lamed Vav Amud Bet tells a story that Rav Chananya took a bite out of his esrog. Now, Shalom's asking himself, why would a person take a bite out of his esrog? Maybe his older brother dared him and offered him $5. I don't know. That's one possibility. Another possibility would be that he was just like on such a high spiritual high and just loved his esrog so much he couldn't control himself and he bit into the esrog. And the last possibility is that he was trying to demonstrate to his talmidim that chaser is only possible on the first day. The funny thing is, I really don't know. I mean, I don't think that the dare was probably didn't happen. But I don't know why Rav Chananya did it. Yes? What? Have you ever bitten into an esrog? Anyway, it only applies to the first day. What about if it's rotten or mushy? So, the Rif says that if it's mushy, it's not considered possible unless it like was rotting. Okay, like if it fell on the floor and got bruised, the Rif says it's not a psul. The Torah says it is a psul, and the Mishnah Berurah passes lahachmir. As if an etrog falls and gets all mushy in one spot because it fell, according to the Mishnah Berurah, it's a psul on the first day. If it's smelling, it smells and it's mushy, so then it's pasul lekuli alma. But we're only talking about the first day. Now we get to the fourth lekicha tama, which is nital hapitom. And here there's an interesting machloket rishonim as to what exactly
is the pitom, or in other language, ma pitom. Rabbeinu Yaakov says that that's the pitom. Rabbeinu Yitzchak says that that's the pitom. Okay. If this is not the pitom, it's the oketz. Okay? But I'm just saying that this is not the kuli alma, the pitom. That's number one. Lahalacha, therefore, we're machmir on both. If this is missing, or if this is missing, then it's possible for the first day. Now, what does it mean this is missing? This is the stem. It doesn't mean that this is cut like over here, but rather, this whole base falls out, and leaves a little crater in there, which sometimes happens to etrogim. That would be chaser for the first day. It would be a psul of lekicha tama. Another interesting question. You see that round bally on top?
Yeah.
Is that the pitum? Or is it just a round bally? Huh?
Round bally.
So a lot of people assume that the round bally is a pitum, but in reality, it's the shoshanta. And the shoshanta,
you know, anybody know how to say pitom in English? Okay. Free Shabbos meal to the first person who comes up with an English translation of the word pitom. And you could just scream it out as soon as you know what I mean. Okay?
A stem.
Sorry. Anyways. That round bally is called the shoshanta, and the shoshanta basically translates loosely translated means round bally. Most Rishonim hold that the shoshanta is not part of the pitum. In other words, if the bally falls off, it's not a psul on the first day. However, the Ran is the only Rishon that says that the bally is part of the pitum, and therefore I think it's the Mishnah Berurah that says that Tov Lahachmir. I'm sorry, no, the Ramah. The Ramah says Tov Lahachmir B'makom She'efshar. You know, Zuchatchila, it's better to be Machmir like the Ran, that even the ball is part of the Pitom. But Minastam, it's not. And you have to know how to. Well, you have to know how to. You have to know how to. Who came up with it first, you or Ellie?
No,
Rockland got it first. Stamen. That stamen, by the way, that stamen is the stamen from your high school biology, the center of the flower. That's really what it is. It's the center of the flower where the pollen falls on top of. It's just on some fruit, like your pomegranates and your etrogim, it remains. It doesn't fall off. Anyway, lastly, all Arba Minim have another din, besides the Kicha Tama, they have another din called Hidur. Hidur, yes?
So how is it, what's the whole concept of it? It falls off before you, so then it's fine, you don't have to have it. You said in Israel that most of them don't have it.
Okay. So, Eitan's asking a question. How could it be in Israel? How can you have a pitumless etrog? How could it be kosher? If it's missing a pitum, it's not kosher for the first day. And the answer is that if it falls off naturally as a natural process of the growth, which sometimes happens, lack of water, or it could be the particular strain of etrog, if it falls off on its own, then it's kosher. If it mechanically breaks off, then it's a psul.
How do you mean? Does that include the bottom and the top, which is the
bottom? The bottom can't fall off on its own. But the top could fall off as it grows. It could sometimes dry out and just fall off. Okay? How do you tell the difference, you might ask? And the answer is only a person with experience could actually look at it and tell the difference if it was broken off or if it fell off part of the growth process. I told you, they don't want to grow without a pitum, they like the pitum. It just, most etrogim, it dries up and falls off on its own. Yeah. Okay, while it's growing. The next halacha is the halacha of hidur. The Torah describes the etrog as a pre-eitz hadar. Hadar, okay, comes from the word hidur, and it's not only limited to etrog, as you'll see in the other minim as well, it applies. What are the halachot of hidur? What does it mean that it has to look nice, it has to look beautiful? First of all, if it's dry. If it's dry, it's a psul in hidur, and hidur is a psul for all 7 days. Okay? Hidur is a psul if it's dried out. How dry, you might ask? So dry that you can't get any moisture out of it. Okay? Another din of hidur is a halacha of chazazis, or chazazis. Does anybody know what chazazit means? Chazazit. Het, zain, yud, tet. Chazazit, or some people know it as the black spot. Okay? The black spot. Chazazit is a type of a mold that grows on the etrog sometimes, and it grows just below the surface of the skin, and it always causes the skin to be slightly raised, and it's off color, it's usually black. And chazazit is pasul on the first day, even one single dot is pasul. On the rest of the day, you need two dots. And there's also a difference where it's found. If it's found anywhere from around here and up, that's called the chotem of the etrog. That's the place that we most inspect most carefully. Chotem translates into the word nose. It's the nose of the etrog, the most prominent feature in the etrog. That's, you know, just like a Jewish thing. And any dot that's on the chotem, and more specifically, really high up, we're more machped on. How big is this dot when it's on the chotem? Even a mashu. How big is a mashu, you might ask? Let me tell you a story. When I was your age, they didn't sell etrogim in Alon Shvut, or maybe they did, I just didn't know about it, and I just went to Meir Sharm because I assume that's the cheapest place you want to buy an etrog. Meir Sharm, right? So I went into Meir Sharm and I went to a store and I saw the most beautiful etrogim I've ever seen in my life, and I asked him how much it cost, and he said some ridiculous price. And so I looked through, I spent like 2 hours, I found like the most beautiful etrog I've ever seen. I mean, beautiful. Pay the guy and my heart is just like, I'm just like floating on air. Floating. And I see all of a sudden these three Hasidish looking guys walking with a lulav and esrog down the street really rapidly, and I said to myself, it's 2 weeks before Sukkot, where could they possibly be going? So I run after them and I ask the guy at the back of the line, where are you going? And he says, well, we're going to Rav Sholem Eisen to show him our lulav and esrogim. I figured, there's an adventure, I'll go. I never heard of him, but the truth is, later on I found out that he was the gadol hachoskim in Meir Sharm. And so I followed him. And they duck into an alleyway, and then under a clothesline, and then up over like a stairway, and then down, and then it was very, very confusing. After a couple of minutes, I found myself like on the third floor of a balcony of this apartment house. There are like 40 people in front of me waiting online to show their esro. And I'm waiting there online, thinking to myself, like imagining this old man looking at my esro and screaming, this is the nicest esrog I've ever seen in my life. and I would see these like 40 people in front of me and I feel bad for them, you know. And finally, my turn comes, I show it to him. He looks at the esrog, and then he reaches into his pocket, he takes out a jeweler's loop. You know a jeweler's loop, the thing that jewelers put into their eyes? Puts it into his eye, and he starts like looking at it, and he says, Atach ro'edze? So I look carefully at the esrog, and I said, lo. Zeh. So I have to look closer. And you know how like oranges have like these little pores, and lemons have like a pore? Okay? So this dot that he was pointing at was a quarter of the size of a pour, but it was on towards the top of the etrog. I said, Cain, with a lump in my throat, and he says, Tishma. Telech leben adam, should I say this in English? Go to the man who you bought it from, and tell him that Sholem Eisen asked that he would exchange it. Now, if he doesn't want to exchange it for you, Zeh kasher, you could use it. Okay? My heart was like on the floor. It was like, I just had like the worst puzzle etrog in the world, and this guy's not going to say, oh, no problem, you know, whatever. And I was there. I felt so crushed. I dragged myself down, somehow found myself back to the store, went to the guy and said to him, Tishma, Rav Sholem Eisen Bikesh, im ata yachol lachlif etzeh. He goes, oh, ata halachta l'Rav Sholem Eisen? And then he brought me into his store, all the way into the back. There was this back secret room where all the really nice esrogim were. And the guy let me pick any esrog that I want. And that was it. That was the end of the story. Anyways, so I'm not sure. I don't want to say that. I'm not sure. He was really old. 29 years old. That's what I just said. I'm not sure.
I thought you were talking about the store.
Anyways, so you have to be aware that there's an issue of chazazit, specifically more, I mean, practically speaking, towards the top. That's why people look for completely clean etrogim. Now, you do have a phenomenon where the leaf of the tree brushes against the etrog and causes an irritation that's in color, something like the color of this desk, of these desks, okay, like a cream color, and it's usually rough, okay. In Yiddish, it's called bletlach. There are some poskim that feel that bletlach has the din of chazazit, but most poskim hold it's not really chazazit. Some people look for a completely clean etrog. Other people say, oh, I know that that's just bletlach, and it's just an irritation, and it's not puzzle. Oh, yeah? Okay. Another din of hidur is the color. An etrog which is black or white is puzzle. Okay, I've seen black and white etrogim. You probably won't get to see it. But the more common halacha is if an etrog is yarok kikarti, it's pasul. If it's as green, you know what a karti is?
Leek.
A leek. How many of you have met a leek? Avi, describe a leek to me. What? A leek. It's like what?
It's like a
spring onion or a scallion on hormones. It's just like huge, and it's green, right? Now, what green? How green is it? So let's see. Adir, stand up for a moment. See that green? That's kosher. That's a kosher green. It's darker than that. It's still lighter than that. That's completely pasul. Your shirt is completely pasul. It's like a deep grass green. Okay? A deep grass green. No, that's the bakana. A deep grass green is problematic. And it's a chisaron in growth, really. Now, if you're buying green esrog and it turns yellow, it starts to turn yellow after the chag, according to most poskim, that's a siman that it was a mature fruit and it was kosher. But once again, you only know after the chag. Another trick, if you want to turn your slightly green etrog into a yellow etrog, is to do the apple trick. Who knows the apple trick? Correct. You put it into a paper bag with an apple. Why a paper bag, you ask? Why an apple? Okay? The reason why you use an apple, the truth is you could use a banana, but a banana is a little bit too potent. Fruit, when it starts to ripen, gives off a type of gas. I don't know if it's methane gas or... It's a type of gas. Huh? ethylene?
Yeah.
You say that with authority.
Biology.
Biology? You remember your biology?
Yes.
It gives off ethylene gas, okay? And that causes things around it to ripen also. That's what one apple spoils a barrel. One rotten apple spoils a barrel. Because the rotten apple, the apple gives off this ethylene, and it causes the fruit to ripen. So if you want to cause your etrog to ripen so it turns yellow before the chag, you put it into a bag. Now why a paper bag? Because you don't want the moisture to build up in a plastic bag. The moisture will just build up. The paper bag will hold the ethylene in and allow the water to pass through the paper. Okay? That's the trick. And you want to be careful. You don't want to overcook it because it could make it possible if you overcook it. But it works. You have to be careful. And you have to do it evenly and whatever. Rotate it, because otherwise it will be only one side yellow, which in and of itself is a problem. If an etrog is round, it's possible. Okay, if it's perfectly round, it's possible. An etrog that has been preserved, not halacha l'maisa. In any case, we'll skip it. Let's get to the lulav. Okay, lulav is a date palm, meaning a palm that has dates, as opposed to the Canary Island palm that looks exactly like the date palm, but it doesn't have any dates. Okay, so a canary is a problem. You want to stay away from Canary Island palms. All right. The basic description. Who is it? Who just went out? Who was that? Wow. Okay. Anyways, the your lulav
has a spine, the hard part, and then you have leaves growing up from it. Now, why did I draw this? Because when you there's a shear, the size of a lulav is 3 tefachim. 3 tefachim, if you look on the floor for a moment, okay? 3 tefachim is the size of these balatos. You know what a balata is? These guys, these tiles are balato. This is 3 tefachim according to the chazonish. These are chazonish balato. Okay? A tefach is about that much, or 10 centimeters, 9.7 centimeters according to the chazonish. So approximately 30 centimeters. A lulav, the length is 4 tefachim, or 40 centimeters, and it's measured from the tip of the shedra. It is common to find many undersized lulavs in the market, and if what I heard about Egyptian lulav and El Arish lulav won't be around, you probably will have a lot of undersized lulav because there's going to be a shortage of lulavs. So you have to measure from here, and over here, by the way, you measure from the place where the last leaf came out of. If someone rips off some leaves, so you have a bald spot over here up until here, so then you have to measure from this spot. You understand? Till over here, which is where the last leaf exits, the top of the shedra, has to be 4 tefachim or approximately 40 centimeters. Alright?
You're measuring the shedra, the spine. The definition of the spine is as long as you see that wood spine, which is till the last leaf splits off. Okay? The head of the lulav, the rosh lulav, is the 3 uppermost leaves, or the center leaves, and there are a number of psulim that could happen to the head of the lulav. Number 1, midin hidur, niktam rosho, if the top is snipped off. Okay, I don't know if you've ever seen in Meir Sharma, maybe you saw pictures of someone taking a jeweler's loop and looking at the tip of a lulav. You've never seen that? Okay, why would someone take a jeweler's loop and look at the tip of a lulav? The answer is because he wants to make sure that little tiny pinned point wasn't broken off. Okay, because that's a din of niktam rosho. Even a mashu who is posel, and that's why they use a jeweler's loop to look at it. It's not because you need a jeweler's loop to see in a mashu. In other words, anything you can't see with the naked eye is not possible. But they're looking at this to make sure that if it looks like abruptly cut, that's not something that was cut off, but it looks the top looks naturally whole. Okay, so niktam rosho is a psul. That's why people look at the tip. A very, very common psul is nistak, if it splits. And there's two ways it could split. One way is nistak kehemnik. Anybody ever see a hemnik? A hemnik is a fork that looks like this. Two prongs that are opened up. That's a hemnik. The middle leaf, every leaf of the lulav is double, right? It has two layers. You know that? Who knows how to make a ring? Lulav ring. Raise your hands. A ring out of a lulav leaf. You just take a look at the people who know. They're going to give a chug on basket weaving and lulav rings to show you how to do it. But if you pull off a leaf, it has two layers. Okay, the center leaf or the tiomet, the center leaf of the tiomet has to be complete. In other words, if it splits, and it can split, it could sometimes split like that. So the center leaf is like held apart, and that's called nistak kehemnik. Okay? Nistak kehemnik is possible even in a mashu. So if you notice, the middle leaf is open and seems to have two points or two layers. By looking at it, you could see light in between them. Okay? That's a psul. Quite often, it's hard to determine which is the center leaf. And there's a way of like slowly working your way up by separating leaves, till you see exactly which one is the middle leaf. Often a lulav is hard, rock solid, and fused together because it hasn't yet developed to a point that it's opened up. And the lulav seller is not interested in you breaking it apart, right? Because he doesn't want it to be nistak. So obviously then you wouldn't be able to open it. But that's a nistak ahemnik. The other type of split is called nechlaka hatiyomet. Nechlaka hatiyomet means we're talking the middle leaf, and it's split, except it's not open like that. It's together, so that if you look at it and even turn it around, it looks like it's together. However, it isn't really glued together. In other words, if you slightly touch it, it will open up, it would separate without making a sound like it's ripping, right? It was already ripped before, and it's open. So there, the halacha is, the nechlaka tiyomet meikar din, it's if it's rov. Meaning from the place it's connected to the lulav, the entire, let's say, it's connected over here and ends up there. If it's majority split, that center leaf, then it will be possible. However, because the Tumah Deshan makes the comment that the minog is afilu miktzat, that's what the Ramah quotes, that miktzat shouldn't be open. And that's why people try that even like a half an inch or a quarter of an inch, it shouldn't be opened at all. However, the Mishnah Berurah comments that if a person already bought it, then for sure he shouldn't use somebody else's lulav. He should use his own lulav, as long as it's not split by rov. This din of nistak, even kehemnik, is a din in lekicha tamma. It applies only to the first day. After the first day, it's not relevant anymore whether it's split or not split. Okay? Another din, and you can commonly found in Bulavin, is Rosho Kafuf Ka'agmon. Does anybody know what an agmon is?
Reed.
Very close, yes? It's a plant that grows near swamps, and it's a flower. It's a flower that the head of the flower is bent over like that. Okay? And it looks like it's depressed. Rosho Kafuf Ka'agmon means if the top of the lulav is bent over. Now there's a machlokes we've shown him. Are we talking about just the tippy top, or are we talking about the shed where the whole thing is bent over? So machlokes we've shown him. Most we've shown him understand that Rosh HaKofuf Ka'agmon is just the tippy top is bent over, but not the shedra. However, the Rosh says Rosh HaKofuf Ka'agmon is referring to the shedra. The spine is doubled over. That's what's possible, the Rosh says. Rav Yishonim say no, the top is bent over. The Rosh says no, the spine. If just the top leaf is bent over, the Rosh says not only is that not possible, I prefer using that lulav because that has like a safety seal that it can't be nistak. It won't split open because it grew closed. You might have seen these type of lulav. There's a tip organically. In other words, at part of its growth, it just bent over and it grew like that, folded over the tip. So the Rosh says he prefers that. The Ramah even quotes the Rosh that he prefers it. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rosh that he prefers it. And it's ironic because Rov Rishonim say that that's possible. But the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah and all the Poskim say that it's kosher. and that it's a plus to buy a lulav like that. I personally don't like them, but that's the deal. Okay? There's also dinim of hidur as far as the lulav is concerned. It can't be dry to the point that it would crack as soon as you press it between your fingers. Squeeze, crack. Like it crumbles. No, the leaf crumbles because it's so dry.
The
lulav leaves. The things that come out of a spine are lulav leaves. Okay? Question. When I came in here, I said I'm not going to give you an hour shiur. The truth is I started at 6:20. I could probably finish Arba Minim in the next 10 minutes. Who doesn't want me to? There you go. Unanimous. Okay. Let's talk now about Hadassim. How do you say Hadass in English? No meal in that. Myrtle. Okay? We'll talk myrtles. The definition of a myrtle as given in the Gemara is that, number one, it has to be mishulash. It's a plant that mishulash means that there are nodes on the branch, and out of each node comes three leaves. That's mishulash. As opposed to, if they're not exactly coming out of the same lateral node, it's considered a hadas shote, okay, or a deviant myrtle. Yes. Yes. In Israel nowadays, 80-90% of the hadasim you will find will be prepackaged, and the package will say on it like muhudar lefi Reb Chaim Noah or the muhudar lefi Chazon Ish, because it's a machote as to the length between the Chazon Ish and Reb Chaim Noah, which has to do with the story I told you. So the prepackaged, and the prepackaged ones you could assume are all mishulash. There's a machloket between the Rishonim and the Gaonim. Does it have to be rov mishulash or all mishulash? Because as you get closer to the roof, the tendency down here is to become a little bit deviant. Okay? So according to the Gaonim, the whole shear of 3 tfachim, or let's say 30 centimeters, should be all mishulash. But according to the Rishonim, it's enough that rove of this is mishulash. The Rosh says it's better, if you can, to try to be marked as like the Gaonim. In Israel today, it's very, very easy. Because it's prepackaged, they're plentiful, there shouldn't be any problem as far as finding mishulash. The only eitz I could give you is to look carefully at the very, very top tip of the hadassim, the branch part, and try to get one that's brown up here. Because what happens is you have sometimes new growth, and this part is green still, and it hasn't turned brown yet. And the new growth has a tendency, after 3 or 4 days of use, to wilt and to flop over. The flopping over is not necessarily possible, but it's very depressing to look at. Okay? You want to keep your hadassim leaf on the branch. And you know, because you want to keep the mishulash, you want to keep it all mishulash. If some fall off, at least according to the Rishonim, you'll be yotzei. But lechachil, you want to get them. You know, you don't want them on. Which brings me to the little holders that, you know, the Chinese cufflet, Chinese finger thing. What do they call them? Finger cast. You know, the what do they call them? Kaiserklach. What do they call them in Chutz Laaretz? Those the little basket, the little basket that comes out of the side of the lulav. Holders, you call them? You English. You have an English word for everything. Okay? Kaiserklach. They're called Kaiserklach. And those Kaiserklach are responsible for parceling endless amounts of hadassim through Jewish generations. Because when you put the hadassim in there, you hear this snap, 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 snap as you put it in. And you're wondering to yourself, do we still have rove or don't I have rove? So what do? You pull it out and you hear snap, 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 and then you definitely don't have rove, right?
Yeah.
To add insult to injury, who's responsible for making those koishaklach that pass by Yisrael's hadassim? The little sons of Mechablim from Gaza. Mechablim, terrorists. Sons of terrorists, the little Arab kids, they're the ones that make that. They're not made in China. They're not made in, you know, the Far East. The little Arab kids make those things. And I'm just saying, you know, I don't. I'm against the Koi Chapach. I don't use them. Because they strip off my Hadassim. I don't mind employing Arabs. But it bothers me that it always strips it off. So, I mean, one Eitzah is to find like an extra jumbo size Koi Chapach. They have those, you know, whatever. And also, to press it together, when you press it together, that's, you know, it opens up much wider. And then you could put your thing in. But you're running a risk.
What do you do if you don't use it? You just basically take your lula, okay? Here's the spine. On the right side are your hadassim. You need three of them, right? Left side your arachot. And you take a fiber of lula, you tie it around here, and you tie it around there twice. Tie a knot. And shalom al Yisrael.
Another bonus, the poskim say clearly that lulav requires eged, it requires to be tied together. The Gemara says it. The Rama says the din of eged, the din of tying it together, requiring a knot, is a knot that it's also to make on Yom Tov, which is what we would call a double knot. But anybody who knows how to make a lulav ring, Michael, are you still with me? Anybody who knows how to make a lulav ring realizes that most probably you're not over on the issue of kosher if you make a lulav ring. So halachically, the lulav ring is not really a knot. And according to Rama, you have to use a knot. So even if you use those kosher klach, that's not a knot. Even if you use a kosher klach, you would have to like put around, you know, go around it and make some kind of a knot in order to halachically bind them together and that it can considered eged. Huh? Kosher.
I don't know how to do it. And on top of that, you plan for it to work in the higher area.
But it won't.
No, Kayama, you can't make that knot on Yontif, but you can make it before. You could tie it before.
But is it not that if you were to make
it? It's a Kayama and it's considered Uma. It's also on Yontif. No, my point is the other way around. You know, I'm trying to prove to you that your lulav, when you make your lulav, if you put it together, you must use a knot.
You
must use a knot.
So no,
why can you use those fancy things?
Those fancy things don't have a halach of kosher.
The rings?
The rings.
Why not?
Because they're not. Because they don't have a din of a knot. I'll talk to you after Shir. All right, let's quickly, I'm skipping a lot of halachas, but let's get to the arava, the willow branch is long, has a long leaves, it's supposed to be thin, it's supposed to have smooth edges, which we have like a semi-smooth edge, which is okay, because that's the type of aravos that grow on the side of the Yarden, and when God gave the Torah, the great grandpappy of those willow trees were already at the Nachal when Hashem said it, so that must be the right species. The length has to be three 30 centimeters. Also, when you tie your hadassim and your arabas to the lulav, you should tie it in such a way. Wait, let me take this lulav over here. You should tie it in such a way. And here's your shedra. Your hadassim should be higher than the arabos on this side, and there should be a tefach of shedra above the top of the hadassim, preferably. It's not ma'akeh, but preferably. Your arabos should be lower than the hadassim because they're less important. Okay? Now, very, very quickly.
How much lower?
Just slightly lower. Now let me get quickly to the din of netilah. By the way, Hoshana Rabbah, you have to use aravos that are just as kosher as regular aravos. Okay, your aravos you want to keep in a plastic bag, a zip bag, or whatever it is, because if you don't, they get all dried out, and you're going to have to replace them. So you have to come up with some kind of a system of keeping your aravos fresh. You might want to save the bag that you're going to get from the hadassim. And you, let's say, cut off the top, so that's a good bag to like store your aravos and hadassim in between use, or just make sure that it's kept moist. Sometimes people put some tissue paper, some moist tissue paper with it. Yeah.
Are you tweaking using the yeshiva that you know of?
No. And you're not going to be in yeshiva over sukkahs in any case. But the point is to keep it airtight. More important than refrigeration, keep it out of the sun, keep it airtight. Very quickly, as far as the netilah, you should lift up the lulav in your right hand. Even though the esrog is more important, but the lulav has three minim and the esrog is only one. Okay? So you lift it up in your right hand. Let's say you're a lefty. Okay? If you're a lefty, the next question, who's a lefty? Raise your hands. Who's a lefty and a Sephardi? Who's a lefty and a Sephardi? Okay, so you're Ashkenazi lefties. Okay? If you're an Ashkenazi lefty, you're supposed to switch hands. Switch it. In your left hand, right. Now, a little bit thing about the netilah. The mitzvah of netilah, a mitzvah to make a bracha, is always over l'asiyatan. And this last thing I'm going to end with. You always have to do it over l'asiyatan. You have to make the bracha before you make the mitzvah. Which is why you were taught in kindergarten to have the esrog pitum down. Because if it's not the way it grows, then you're not going to be yotzei. So you lift it up, you make your bracha, and then you swivel the pitum up, and then you shake, and that works. As long as you're good at the swiveling and you don't drop the etrog, that would work. A very simple solution is to put the lulav and etrog and everything down on the table in front of you. Just put your hand on top of it. Don't lift it up. Make the bracha, and then lift it up. That works. The last trick is the negative kavana trick, where you lift it up with negative kavana, you make your bracha, and then you go ahead and shake it. But everybody knows the danger of negative kavana, right? There's this little devil on your left shoulder that whispers in your ear, have kavana, have kavana. And you're trying not to listen to him. But in a split second, you have kavana, and then all of a sudden you blew it, you can't make the bracha anymore. Take care. We're going to miss Marv. We want to catch Marv.
Will this still be next week?
Marv in 3 minutes.
Alicia, did you call me during the break? Yes. And then I fell asleep. Huh? And then I fell asleep.
Ah.
Did you get hurt?
Not?